The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everybody, Juan here. I just wanted to record a small little intro to this since there was not a natural intro to this show. This is a round table that Gabe got to be in. The movie was created by RZA. It's called Cutthroat City. It's about the Ninth Ward of New Orleans post-Hurricane Katrina, but I think recently after Hurricane Katrina. Kind of a documentary about what's going on and how these kids try to survive. But there's no intro. It kind of just gets right into the roundtable, so I wanted to just talk about it a little bit. The YouTube trailer had just come out right as we were about to go in for the roundtable, so I'll post that here as well, but go check it out. The roundtable consists of Demetrius Shipp Jr., Denzel Whitaker, Kian Johnson, and Tyron Woodley, all actors on the movie. They'll explain a little bit about what they've done in the past, and you might know a few of them from the names. Tyron Woodley's a UFC fighter. A few of them have been in a couple of different things here and there, but I just wanted to record a little something since it would have been a little weird to just jump right into it, but here we are. Gabe gets to ask a few questions, and you'll get to learn a little bit about a pretty cool movie made by RZA. Hopefully you guys enjoy it.
I was gonna try my SoundCloud first for you guys.
Oh. All right.
I'm just kidding.
Oh no. Okay. Cool. Let's start then.
Hi.
Yeah. So I mean, loosely, Cutthroat City is about four kids right after Hurricane Katrina. They're seeing the whole city of New Orleans being built around them, and they're seeing the Ninth Ward, the only place being neglected, and the only place not being treated well, and the only place not receiving any money. And these young kids...
That's a true actor right there.
So dedicated.
Yeah. And you start to see these young kids needing to make money for themselves and then choosing a route that they probably wouldn't have to go otherwise, and they start robbing casinos throughout Louisiana. And that's loosely what the film's about. Don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, we all been there before.
Yeah, you know, when you heist situations, you just gotta go rob a casino. But I think it's metaphorical because it's, you know, the first things that were, there's a line in the film that the first things that were being built right after Hurricane Katrina, the first things, Harrah's was up right away, you know, the casinos were up and running, and then the places that really mattered weren't ever looked at. So it was us kind of like, you know, sticking it to the man.
And what was it like working with an older crowd who's known for their role as gangsters? Like, what did you learn from them on set?
Everything. I mean, we just in, not even just as actors, but I think just in like life situations, learning just the way that these people live their lives and little things that they probably don't think are that important, but when you hear it, you're like, I gotta go write that down somewhere. You know, things that Terrence would say or things that Wesley would say. You'd be like, you know, like on voice memo, trying to record these kind of like even and of course RZA, like on top of all things, like. Spending a month with him was just, you know, we got to dinner and he would just, you want RZA to talk all of dinner. You don't want to get a word in edgewise because his stories are so incredible and you learn so much by being with him.
It's very humbling in that regard because, like, you know, you might call him an OG, an old head, like, but... I think you kind of said the best, like when you listen to the stories, like these are people who created legacies for themselves. And these are people who have also set examples for us, you know, for men of the culture, like they've represented basically our soundscape of what we were listening to growing up or either movies that we were watching growing up. So it would behoove us, like we would be idiots to not listen to their stories, you know? Whether they play in gangster films, whether they play in martial art films, it really doesn't matter. It's all about the life experience.
Yeah, they definitely dropped a lot of game. Terrence was it was almost as if he used the opportunity with having us there to make sure that he shed light on things and, you know, gave us a little bit of game that he could. Because once he was there, like my whole time on set with him, he was just dropping bars like all day long. He was like, all right, I'm here, this is what y'all need me for, like, we go when it's time to act, I'm gonna get to what I gotta get to. I'm gonna handle business, but for in between takes. Come here, young blood. You know what I'm saying? Come here, young bros. Let me holler at you and tell you something. It was just a whole lot of stuff, as well as Wesley, him giving a lot of knowledge, like workout stuff. Like, because I don't know, people, I don't know, like, a lot of people don't know, like, Wesley's still in shape. He like 50 some years old. Like, he had a white beater on set. I'm like, whoa, this is crazy to see this dude, like, still, like, in tip top shape. Like, and then I'm asking Wesley, like, yo, how you, you know, say, how you get here? You still like this? And he's like, you know, gave me some game. I think we ended up doing some push ups and some little yoga poses and all type of stuff.
Well, it was mainly the yoga poses. He was like, I swear by downward dog.
Right.
I swear by it.
He's like, look, do downward dog right now. Do it for 30 seconds. I guarantee you break a sweat. I'm like, all right, let's go. I get up. I'm like, oh, shit. Downward dog.
I've known Wesley for a long time. And the thing about Wesley is, what makes him such a great actor, if you know him in person, he's nothing like any other character he's played. He's not Nino Brown. He's not Pootie Tang. He's not Blade. For him to be so different in real life, but when he transformed himself, like, he told me that people are still mad at him from New Jack City. Mm-hmm. They, like, legit real life mad at him. So I think that, you know, RZA, from the scene that I was in, when he was yelling out the lines, I felt like he was an actor talking the lines through. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, it really feels like he's almost living his role. He's living his character. He knows it so well in his mind. And I think that's why artistically, as a producer and a rapper, he was able to portray that whole mental image. They had like a cultish following. It's very similar to Comic-Con, if you really think about it. That was kind of how the Wu-Tang fan base was.
How was it for you, T-Wood? You know, obviously you've done some acting gigs, but kind of stepping into a bigger role here, working with experienced actors. How has it been with the transition?
I never want to be the weakest link. You know, and they'll probably tell you that, you know, there's a man, you sound like you're from New Orleans. Are you from New Orleans?
Yeah.
So I think just not wanting to be the weakest link. We all going to get our chance to blow up and be, you know, the top dog. And the same way I had to do it in mixed martial arts, I was the guy that was the training partner. Fly me down to ATT, I used to be a bag of bones. I sparred everybody. I used to spar twice a day. And he got to the point where it wasn't my moment yet, and I paid my dues, and when my moment came, then it was my time. So acting is no different, you know. In acting, I'm a white belt. I'm growing, getting better, stretching myself, and this is just something different than what I would do in normal films. Like I said before, I can do the tough guy easy. I can do the thug easy. You know, those roles are, come to me really naturally, but things that don't, I don't want to get a script and get in a position where now I got to cry, and I haven't cried in 10 years, so now I have to do, you know, something super quirky, and it's just really not in my, you know, personality. So I'm just trying to stretch myself and be comfortable wherever.
I wasn't working with T-Wood. I'm a UFC guy, in case anyone figured out. So I wasn't working with T-Wood, you know, kind of in this role, and, you know, working with a guy who's obviously well-known for his, you know, he's a welterweight champion of the world, but now he's kind of stepping into your world.
You could definitely tell the energy was there, that he put the work in. That's what I would say, because I really didn't know what to expect, and the role is very much different from what he's, you know, so what you expected him to be.
Well, it's believe it or not, it's a vulnerable
role.
Right,
it's very, very
vulnerable. It's someone put in a situation where he's scared shitless. And, yeah, it was cool. I mean, I've been watching his fights for a long time, so it was also interesting seeing him, you know,
way different
pissing
light.
His pants a little bit.
Yeah, he definitely brought
you
it
see
up.
That waiver.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I actually wanted to follow up on that, because, you know, with your fights, and then you're also being a commentator, and you seem to do really well in front of the camera and with the, you know, just kind of embrace that. Yeah. Is it something you see yourself kind of expanding more into?
For sure. I try to separate all my categories. Like, Tyron Woodley, the father, is different than Tyron Woodley, the podcast, or different than Tyron Woodley that has his own TMZ show, different than the actor, different than the Fox analyst, and way different than a fighter. Because a fighter, out of all the things I do, that's the thing I do the least. I fight 3 times a year, maybe. I haven't fought in a year. So if you paint one house, that don't make you a painter. I fight because I'm good at it. I fight because, you know, I use it as a vehicle to open up other doors, but I plan on doing the same thing, being a world champion in acting and film and entertainment and music and anything that has to do with the art. So I just never want to be in something to be in it. If I'm going to be in it, I want to be all the way in. I want to be the best at it.
I really respect you diversifying your bonds.
You said what?
I really respect you diversifying your bonds.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Make sure you got the joke that was coming in about the Tupac thing, but in all seriousness, like, how is it for you, you know, getting these new roles? To move away from that a little bit. Because, I mean, obviously it was an iconic moment for you to play that role, but obviously you have other goals as an actor.
Right. So that was a wonderful opportunity. It's led me to be here. So I'm forever grateful for that experience and for that mark in my career and in my life. But moving past it and giving this opportunity has been beautiful for me because it's a complete, you know, different thing that I got to do. It's me breathing life into my own character and being from New Orleans and having that and taking on that and, you know, embodying what it's like to be from the, you know, the NOLA culture and, you know, just separating myself and becoming my own person, my own actor and doing my own thing and, you know, growing in it.
There's obviously a lot of iconic heist movies out there. Pete, Dead President. So what separates this movie? It's a heist movie, but what makes it different?
What makes it different? That we're robbing casinos and we're young. Yeah, yeah. Three and a half black guys.
It's the age and desperate. Well, no, because the heist movies, there's always desperation. I think it's the characters who are telling the story.
Right.
That makes it very different.
And not to interrupt you, but it's a relatable story that something that actually caused it, that it's an American historic event that happened that led us to get to this. You know,
well, the story is not about a bunch of thugs who get together and decide to go on heists. It's right. about a bunch of young kids who have grown up together and don't know what else to do, and they're in a time of need, and it's really to them, it's their only choice of getting out and not being stuck in the Ninth Ward for the rest of their life.
Keenan, how is fan reception different for a movie like Cutthroat City as opposed to like a manga fandom like Alita?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a built-in fan base with the manga, but I mean, both receptions have been incredible. Yesterday was the Alita kickoff, and kind of got to watch people watch. You know, we watched showed 18 minutes of the footage, and people seem to love it. But on this side, you know, it's like you have the famous RZA directing, you know, a film that, you know, he nailed the kung fu aesthetic in Man with the Iron Fists, and I think that as a director, for him to be able to, very much like Robert Rodriguez, and why I think that they are close friends, and Quentin, like they have a style, but their style is not one specific way of shooting. So it was cool being a fan of Man with the Iron Fists and then seeing how he approached this film, trying to nail the aesthetic of the Ninth Ward and nail the aesthetic of these like young, gritty kids. So yeah, I mean it's great to be part of both films, and they're both looking great so far.
I don't know what he did on Alita, but he definitely stands out in this movie for sure. His character is definitely someone that you're going to be captivated by.
How did you all become part of this project?
I actually I heard about it a long time ago. My my roommate at the time, Jared Einson, was one of the producers on the film. And he's sitting right over there. He brought this character to me and said, "Is this something that you'd be interested in playing?" And it was, you know, how could you not? And with the people that he was surrounding the cast with, and I've obviously been a fan of all these guys' work. And I just thought it'd be so fun to spend a month in New Orleans and become brothers and get gritty and act. There's nothing better.
Interesting.
I was kind of like the last man to get the call. I was like the sixth man off the bench. For no real purpose, really. It was like the producer, same producer, Jarrett, and also Will, who I'd worked with on another film called Submerge. They both hit me up like literally, I think it was the day before Thanksgiving. And you guys were about to roll into production, and they hit me up, and they were like, "Yo, man, so we need the heart. We need somebody to come in and make people cry. Like, you want to come do this film in New Orleans?" And they just started listening to the cast, and I was like, whoa, hold on. So, yeah, this is happening because, you know, it's Thanksgiving. It's the end of the year. Things, like, start to fall down a little, like, you know, dwindle down basically to vacations and whatnot. So I'm thinking the rest of my year is set. All of a sudden, next thing I know, day after Thanksgiving, back to the house, fly out. So
I got called by Will, one of the producers. I did a movie called Escape Plan 2 with him, and also did a movie called Office Uprising. That shit came out yesterday. So we did that movie, and then he called me about this part. He said, man, I'm going to warn you, man, it's a little different. You know, I want you to read this first and see if you're comfortable with it. And then I just fought not too long ago. You know, money-wise, I was all right. You know, I wasn't rich, but I wasn't broke.
That's a good place to be.
And I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, do I really want to go out there and do this for, you know, this particular part? And, you know, in film, you always got to consider, how is this going to impact your career? Is this going to be something that helps it? There's certain roles that I don't care what the dollar amount is, I'm never going to do those certain types of roles. So I read it, I thought about it, prayed about it, and I said, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. So that's kind of how it happened.
For me, just to be honest, I don't want to lie, but I got a call, like I got the email, like to self-tape, I believe. It was either self-tape or come in, and that they had sent it to me. And then I think like a little bit later on, like the day, I got like the offer. I was like, oh, that was nice. And then I seen the names attached to it. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, yo, don't hesitate nothing. You know, like, don't like slow nothing down. I need the paperwork fast. Let's move it fast. Let me sign quick. And I'm ready to go. So it was just amazing. I'm so happy, like, and excited because it came right off of All Eyes on Me. And I had the most amazing experience as far as like my second movie that I could ever have.
One cool thing about the movie that when I was talking to Will, they were in the building portions of building this movie when we were doing Escape Plan 2. So they hadn't had the cast yet, and they were showing me who they were thinking about using, completely different than everybody that's on the panel right now. And, you know, it was good actors, but it was just budgeting and raising funds for it. He was telling me the concept of it and what he was thinking about it. And then sometimes a project stops there. It never really reaches the point where it hit fruition, where you actually get somebody to see the same vision you have and invest that money into that. And, you know, it takes one or two big name actors to commit, because if you would have seen a list of actors that you didn't know, maybe you would have thought a second or third about it. But when you start seeing people with strong careers and strong names behind it, start to attach themselves. So more importantly for me, I thought it was dope for me to see this was an idea. Like on the smallest little one-page press kit thing ever, and then over time, it's getting better, we're getting closer, you know, we got people that are interested in it, and to see what it's become now. I think this is like a sleeper movie that's going to do crazy numbers. I think it's going to do crazy. I think it's like when you think about like a New Jack City, or you think about the budget of a Friday or a movie like that, that just because of the energy, the youth in the acting, the OGs in there, what they're talking about, New Orleans has had this tax break forever. Yeah. After the hurricane hit, they had a tax break. All the films started going there. People started moving to New Orleans. Nobody did a film about the catastrophe. Nobody really touched on it. So though it was a long time ago, this is going to be the first time that somebody didn't just go and participate in these huge tax incentives, and they actually show tribute and respect and really told the story the way it should be. So I think with those three different categories, I think this movie can do crazy. So I'm just glad I got to do my piece in it, and I'm going to watch these guys do their thing.
While you were filming in New Orleans, did you talk to anybody that had gone through Hurricane Katrina, just to like maybe research, yeah, or just to see how they were coping?
Riza thought it. We met with a dialect coach, because we wanted to obviously
that was
give as much respect.
That had to be a very unique, funny experience for you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like for myself too, but it was like...
So we're playing these kids who grew up in a very impoverished, rough area. And then we get a dialect coach who didn't quite meet those requirements.
She had a little bit.
She just wasn't right. And she was a great human being. Nothing against her.
She wasn't the kid I saw.
No, she wasn't good.
And you want to give as much respect to these characters as possible. And RZA had the brilliant idea of just like, we're shooting the Ninth Ward, like let's just hire some guys from the Ninth Ward who like speak the lingo and just. And so we met with these like three guys who were always on set. Born and raised, Ninth Ward, all, you know, both houses have been torn up. have been slowly renovating for years and years and years. And he would just, you know, read your lines, and I'd listen and try to get everything that I could from it. And they were the best dialect coaches we could have ever had.
That's a real deal. And best travel guys at that point.
Right.
I mean, they showed us around the town, so.
Yeah.
They gave us a bunch of little slang. It was definitely interesting and funny being around those people. It was really authentic, you know what I'm saying? You got to feel like, damn, I'm really a part of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's not like me just, like,
and they made us feel really comfortable, too. Like, I'm sure there was multiple times where we didn't exactly hit the dialect on, but they would come and tell us in a way that was helpful. And I think they also wanted what was best for the film. And I think RZA, being the smart man that he is, including the Ninth Ward, and not just saying we're going to shoot a movie here about the Ninth Ward, but not include any of you, in the way that, you know, we used homes of these, you know, our the guy who'd do my fade, he lived.
What was his name again?
Scoop.
He lived in the Ninth Ward, and
we filmed at his house.
And it was cool, just like including these people, and including, like, you know, we weren't building any sets. We didn't have the money to, but we wanted it to be authentic as possible.
Yeah. With situations like what's happened in Puerto Rico after the hurricane, or Michigan. Like, what's it like filming in the Ninth Ward right now? Like, is it still...
It's devastating.
It's still, like...
Absolutely.
It's devastating.
It's crazy.
I mean, there was a schoolhouse. It was like the actual film. The second you drive over the bridge, it just changes instantly. Right. Like, you're downtown...
Harrah's is
a cathedral. It's massive. The lights and everything.
Canal Street is popping.
And then you cross the bridge, and I mean, there's still. I just remember seeing my character. I got to choose a lot of the tattoos for my character, and I really wanted on the doors. They kind of have like the statistical what happened in each home, so they'd have. I don't remember the exact way they laid out, but it's basically an X. Mm-hmm. The top. The bottom, side, and they all had a separate meaning of how many people died in the house, when this house was vacated, stuff like that. So I wanted to have one that kind of represented that. I have it on my left bicep. But what was interesting is, even being there, houses still have that sign on their doors, like still. Like, they have not even removed that with paint. You still see, like, these houses that have been run down since Katrina. And that was really interesting. Just seeing how it just hasn't, nothing's changed.
One interesting thing that I learned was that I think one of the drivers told us is that there was a lot of, so there were houses that were, you know, built up, and you could see that they were fixed. You could still see some of the, like, water marks at the bottom. Mm-hmm. But what you could also see was certain homes was that they were like just completely demolished. And that's because people didn't have the money to rebuild the houses. So they just had to, like, you know, sell the land or whatever and just leave it at that. And that was crazy, because it was like you see houses and it's like a big gap in between. Yeah.
And sadly, obviously, real estate is an issue there, and people aren't buying, so people can only really try to sell for nothing. So yeah, there is a lot of, like, you know, just big potholes of, you know, rubble.
Just abandonment, really. There's abandonment with cars. There's, like, abandonment with, like, lawns and homes. Like, you'll just see half of a home blown out. Wow. And, you know, it's... For us, like, we'll show up sometimes on a set, and a set will be, you know, made to look like a tragedy. There wasn't really a joking matter every day we were on set. Like, it was real for us. There was one scene where, like, literally within the movie, we just walk around and we're just supposed to look at the area. Well, that wasn't, you know, it wasn't acting for us. That was us being really in the area and hearing the stories from different people, who've either, like, communities have banded together to either help the homes. Like, one of the drivers had told me, like, he literally went over to his neighbor's house because nobody was going to do it. The government wasn't going to give them any money. It was all about a community thing, and the community got together because that's all they had.
That's all we have time for today, guys.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barren Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barren Space production.